From the four corners of Southern California, this is The Hot Seat, and you're in it with me, Max Schwartz. It starts right now. Today on the phone is our special guest. I have 62nd District Assemblyman Stephen Bradford. How are you, Assemblyman Bradford? Thank you very much for taking the time to call into The Hot Seat this afternoon.
Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. We have a lot to cover, so I do not want to say any more. So without further ado, let's get started. I'd like to start off by talking broadly, starting with the recent past and going forward. How do you believe the last session went? What did you like and what didn't you like? And how do you plan to take the momentum into the current session?
I think we had a very good year last year. I think 13 helped move California in the right direction, back to where we like to view California. We passed a middle-class scholarship. We provided a driver's license for undocumented residents here. We also increased the minimum wage here in the state of California. So I think, as they often said, so goes California, so goes the nation. And you see the nation, national leaders are trying to emulate what we did last year.
And how do you plan on taking that momentum into the current session?
Just by continuing to work hard, to continue to stay engaged, not only with your colleagues, but with your district as well, and understanding what is important right now in eliminating poverty here in California. It makes no sense that California has the highest poverty rate of any state in the nation, and we have to address that.
And what other things or what other topics do you hope or do you expect the Assembly to discuss this session?
I mean, it's a myriad of things. I'm pretty sure we're going to deal with water because of the drought situation. That's going to be high on the list of whether we pass a water bond or not here in California. We're also going to talk about the reserve, the rainy day fund, and how much of a rainy day fund we're really going to have versus do we need to restore some of the cuts that we made over the last 5 or 6 years to programs such as education, CalWORKs, scholarships, Cal Grants, Pell Grants. So we got to find where our priorities are again as Californians, as not just as legislators, but as Californians as well.
And I want to mention the drought for a moment, and then we'll go back and we'll talk about the rainy day fund. In terms of the drought, what are you doing in Sacramento to try to alleviate the problem, and what are you telling your constituents to do?
We're just educating folks. I mean, right now Southern California is far beyond any other part of the state. Our water conservation measures always have been at the top. Our water consumption, despite population growing, is at a 1990 level. So Southern California can't really do much more from a conservation standpoint. It's just a question of making sure that water rates are not impacting poor and low-income folks, which we're afraid that might happen, but also looking at new technologies. And when I say new technologies, really technologies that have been around for a long time, like from toilet to tap. I mean, reclaim water. We know we can process sewer water to a point where it's potable again. So we have to get beyond the stigma and understand that the science is there, the technology is there, and also with desalinization, we have a great opportunity to expand upon that. And Orange County is taking a great lead and looking at some of the reclaimed water usage in their area, and I think it's a lot to learn from that.
Do you plan or do you... Are you for building more desalinization plants?
That would be helpful. I mean, we understand the technology works. I mean, it's just a question of getting the cost down. I mean, and once it's where it pays for itself, when it makes dollars and cents, I think it's a technology that is clearly proven itself. You go to Israel, they have the biggest desal plant in the world, and they supply a large portion of their potable water from desalinization.
Okay, and going back to the rainy day fund, what is your position on that? How big are you for such a fund, and if so, for how much?
Yeah, I think it's always good to have reserves. It's just like your home. I mean, you want to have money in case of emergency and in a crisis. To say how much, I can't put a dollar on that, but I know our projections are higher than, our projections on revenue is higher than what the governor's is, so if our projections are higher, we think it's an ability for us to spend, and I don't say spend more, but to restore some of the cuts that we made as well as meet the goals and objectives of the rainy day fund. So,
and that's one thing the governor has said he does not want to do is spend recklessly to restore everything and then some from what was lost. So staying along those lines, but first, before I do, when you say our, do you mean the Assembly specifically or the legislature as a whole?
Oh, well, we had a legislative caucus and we looked at some of our priorities, and hopefully they will be the priorities of the legislature as a whole. And let me be very clear, restoring some of the plans that we cut shouldn't be viewed as reckless. It should be viewed as making Californians whole again, as we have for so many years. So we're not talking about whimsical projects we're trying to do here.
That's a very good point. And in terms of the governor's budget as a whole, what are your thoughts on that? What do you wish he would have funded more, funded less?
Again, some of the social service programs that we've decimated so bad over the number of years. I think we can also do a better job at using rehabilitation funds for our incarcerated population. I think for us to believe that once a person is out and they haven't been totally rehabilitated, that you're going to get a changed behavior, I think that's money well spent if we choose to invest in those individuals in a real substance manner so they have job skills when they come out so they can be contributing members of society. California leads the nation in recidivism with well over 70%, and a lot of that has to do with the fact that these individuals are not prepared to do anything once they've served their time. So I think we can invest in that segment of the population as well.
And along the lines of prisons, it seems as though Governor Brown is spending more money on, like you said, the actual act of incarcerating them rather than helping them afterward. Is the legislature, other than through budget, going to take up some sort of issue or going to try to change that in any other way?
That will be a discussion under the Budget Subcommittee 5. It's a discussion of, yeah, how do we improve upon that and making sure that we're getting the best bang for our buck, because, again, incarceration is not the answer. We have to address this realignment situation, and we shouldn't be even considering building new jails before we're building new classrooms, and especially higher ed from the university, UC, and Cal State system.
Okay, so I'm going to put you on the spot here for one moment. And there was a long time where Governor Brown was facing the contempt of court because he wasn't reducing the inmate population. Do you believe the governor should be held in contempt of court for the way he's handled our prison system?
No, I think you have to. He's working with the parameters that have been given him, and it's no perfect answer here. I think, you know, am I in total agreement of everything the governor's doing? Yeah, no. But at the same time, I'm not here to throw him under the bus and act like he should be held in contempt of court. I think we have to work in a collaborative effort to make sure that we come up with just and fair housing situations, not necessarily farming these folks to other states and letting them get our tax dollars simply because they can house a prisoner cheaper than we can do it in California.
Okay, and I'd like to move on now to discussing your committee specific questions, or ask questions, I should say, relating to your specific committees. And you are the chair of the Assembly Utilities and Commerce Committee. So
correct.
What does this committee do in general, and more specifically, what bills are under or do you believe will be under your consideration this session?
Well, I haven't seen what's going to be introduced for this session, but what's under my purview is all the investor-owned utilities, the Public Utility Commission, the water utilities as well. We deal with that. We deal with a little rail and safety as well. So we just want to make sure that as we move forward in this green economy and this green energy realm, that cost is at the forefront, and ratepayer protection has to be paramount before any technology. And a lot of times the ratepayer is lost in the discussion of the technology, what's the latest and the greatest versus what it really costs and what's the true benefit. So I think that's what we're going to look at. We're going to definitely look at some rate reform, as we looked at it last year with Henry Perez, Assemblyman Perez bill, AB 327, on how do we bring down equitable rates for folks who live in the Coachella Valley or live in the Central Valley, making sure that they're not paying more than folks on the coastal communities who have AC and things of that nature. So rates are definitely have to be something that we continue to work to address and make sure that it's fair and equitable rates on all segments of the utility world.
Do you have any plans on how you want to go about that, dealing with rates?
Just, again, coming up with legislation that fairly balances what one pays. And a lot of times there are cost shifts in a lot of these technologies and a lot of these programs, and the cost shifts go to those non-participating members and customers, I should say. And we want to make sure that it's fair and equitable. Poor folks should not be subsidizing programs in other communities if they're not getting any direct benefit from it. And that's what the discussion has to be about. And the rate structure that we had with the tiered system on the electricity was the results of the energy crisis in 2000 and 2001, which was rushed into place based on the crisis. We have now, if 2020 is anything, we can look back now and say that wasn't the best way to structure rates. So we're trying to address that. And again, Mr. Perez's bill tried to do that. It didn't go as far as we would like, but it has to be a continued dialogue and a continued focus by not only the UNC committee, but members as a whole.
Would you author this rate legislation or rate amendment legislation if no one else does?
I will have to see. I have a full legislative package, I'm pretty sure, like I do every year. So we're going to decide those in the next coming weeks on what I will carry and what I will not.
Are you able to discuss what's in your legislative package?
I mean, we're going to continue to deal with, like you say, consumer protection when he talks to utilities, and we're looking for contract opportunities again, procurement opportunities for women, disabled veterans, minorities. We're going to continue to look at how do we expand that pool of maybe raising that number to maybe 40% participation by the utilities to make sure that women, disabled veterans, and minorities have a chance at doing some of this billions of dollars of contracting opportunities. We want to continue to deal with, some of these criminal justice issues. And, last year I did a bill on expungement. We want to continue to provide opportunities, again, for those individuals who have served their time, who want to be contributing members to society, and we have to afford them those opportunities. So some of these reform legislation I will continue to look at, as I always have, and, expanding on some of the public safety. Last year I did the 3-foot barrier for bicyclists, so we're going to continue to find ways to make our roads safer and make our community safe. So we have a lot of things we're looking at.
Okay, and speaking of reform in the judicial system, do you believe in funding the courts back to the way it was before they were cut?
Well, we're going to believe in some restoral, because justice delayed is justice denied, and when you go to courts today and you have lines out the door, people are not having their opportunity for their day in court. So I think it's imperative that we understand or find a way to afford them the opportunity to get in court and handle things as simple as small claims court or even traffic violations. So we're seeing the backlog, but it's mainly a function of automation, and not until the state as a whole decides to embrace automation in a real sense of, as we see in the private sector, will government ever be as efficient as we hope it to be. So automation in all levels of government have to happen in order for us to get the best bang for our buck.
Okay, and we can spend a full 30 minutes on that, and I'm not going to take our time doing that, but I do want to go back to electricity, like you were discussing earlier, in public utilities. Your Southern California colleague, Senator Ted Lieu, trying to hold Southern California Edison accountable for their lapses during power outages. Where do you stand on Senator Lieu's position, and will you try to assist him in the legislature with what he's doing with Southern California Edison?
I know that issue all too well. I was the public affairs area rep for Southern California Edison before I came to the legislature, so I think I know that issue quite well, maybe more so than Senator Lieu in a sense. I think he's in the right direction, but it shouldn't be a narrow view as it's being looked at. Reliability should be looked at on a statewide level. It shouldn't just be in one particular neighborhood. It shouldn't be simply because it happened in the beach communities. It should be a reliability and safe power should be an issue whether you live in, like I say, the Inland Empire or, anywhere. So I think it was too narrow of a scope, and I think we have to look at it on a broader view.
Is that something you'd be open to doing this session?
I'm open to having any intelligent discussion on common sense legislation.
Okay, and continuing along this line of utilities, do you believe that energy companies or any utility should be able to restore power or water after an outage relatively soon after an outage, say about 4 hours?
It all depends on the circumstances. I mean, to say that a restoral could happen in 4 hours, it's a little naive. It all depends, again, if it was a hurricane situation, it's no way you're going to have restoral in 4 hours. If it's a man-made error that hasn't caused, major damage to the system, yes, that's very feasible. But a lot of times, just to put a window of 4 hours and think that applies to every situation is very naive for anyone to believe that to be the case. It's still people from the storms back east who are still without power, so...
I understand.
Yeah.
And one more question along this in general. What grade would you give the energy companies what grade would you give them for looking at alternative sources of energy?
What grade.
What grade would you give them for the way that they're looking and the way and how hard they're doing to find renewable sources of energy?
I would give them an A. I mean, it's clear they're all out there. It's not that they need to look any harder. It's there. I think the question is the integration and the acceptance. I think our policy in California is flawed from a standpoint. We started from a renewable discussion. We should have started from a clean energy discussion. And if you would have started from a clean energy discussion, you would have seen the utilities embracing this far more readily than you think now. Because, again, when we're so narrowly prescribed as to what a renewable is, it pretty much handcuffs the utility to say that I have to deal with wind and solar. When you have geothermal, you have fuel cells, you have combined heat and power, you have nuclear, you have hydro. All of those are renewables, but a lot of times they're lost in the discussion because we were so narrow in our prescription of what a renewable is, they're missed sometimes. So you have bio waste, you have, yeah, the bio waste and waste energy stuff as well. So we have a lot of different technologies out there, but they're not all clearly defined in our RPS bill.
Okay, and I continuing along the committees you are on. You're also on a member of the Committee on Insurance. So I'm going to start with a simple question, and we'll see where it goes. Do you believe Insurance Commissioner Dave Jones should have more power?
I think he should.
Now, is there anything you're going to try to do to improve his power or give him more?
It's not necessary what I'm trying to do. It has to be the will of the legislative body as a whole. And you always have that argument of separation of the legislative government versus, the executive branch of government. So I think it's a discussion that needs to be had. I think we've worked well with Commissioner Jones, and if we can continue to work in those accord, maybe we don't need to expand his power. But I think he has to, state-elected insurance commissioner should have a little bit more authority in some of the areas of concern that he's interested in addressing, I should say.
So would you say the body itself is not eager, eager is the right word, eager to give him more power at the present time, or do you think...
I wouldn't necessarily say that. I mean, no one's in the business of relinquishing or diminishing their role, so I don't think it has to do with anything with Dave Jones or the Office of the Insurance Commissioner. I think it's, legislator feel if it's a legislative fix that they should can be had, they want to keep it in their backyard.
Okay. And one more question on this, and then we'll move on to other issues. What are you trying to do? Or I should start off by saying, do you believe that insurance policies that are in addition to general policies such as home insurance, so examples I'm talking about are earthquake insurance and fire insurance and flood insurance, do you believe that those should cost as much as they do?
No.
Is there something that you're going to try to do this session to try to change the price?
Again, I haven't looked at any legislation specifically in those areas, but I think right now anyone would agree that what we charge for those particular coverage areas is a little exorbitant. I mean, especially when you talk about different frequencies of floods and earthquakes here in California.
Okay, and I'd like to now move back to a broader issue, and that would be gun control in Los Angeles International Airport. LAX is in your district, and I'm going to take this into two directions. First, do you believe that there should be more gun control or a greater gun control in the state of California, especially around an international airport?
I think there needs to be safety, period. And we need to enforce the laws that we currently have on the books. I think we need to do a better job at screening those who have guns, but a lot of the guns that fall into criminal hands are ill-gotten weapons. So even with the best gun controls, you would still not prevent some of the black market guns from falling in the hands of undesirables. So I think overall, can we improve on that area? Yes. But at the same time, it's just not a simple yes or no answer.
Okay. And in terms of mental health treatment in the state of California, do you believe that anything should be done to reform and improve our mental health? And if so, do you plan on doing any? Is that part of your legislative package?
Mental health is a great priority in California and the nation. When you look at the number of homeless people, many of them have some issue dealing with their mental state. And when you look at some of the senseless shootings and criminal activity, many of them have some diminished capacity at some point. So I think we as California should look at that as a whole. Again, I'm open to a lot of things, and like I said, not until our ledge package is fully shaped. And it's just not about introducing legislation. You want to introduce legislation that you hope will have the support of both the proponents and the opponents in order for it to move forward, in order to gather a signature from the governor. So it's just not as simple as introducing it. It's being very strategic in what it is and how it's crafted in order to guarantee success.
Do you think there would be that multidimensional support for mental health reform?
We would hope. I mean, again, I can't speak for all of my colleagues, but I know it's of a great concern to many that I serve with, that, again, those are areas that we could do a better job at funding. I mean, when you, again, talk about the number of homeless people that have some mental issue, I think if we could provide them with help, we definitely would have a direct impact on the homeless population.
Okay. And moving along, well, staying on the airport theme here, I'm going to talk about aviation business for a moment, because the union workers in Seattle, in Washington, have decided to vote to keep the 777X, the future Boeing aircraft, in Washington. Boeing has announced at the same time that in 2015 it will close the production line of the C-17 Globemaster III production facility in Long Beach. What are you doing to keep the aviation or aerospace jobs we have here and bring more to Southern California?
Well, I just was the co-author on AB 1327, which is a indirect aviation bill of promoting the use of unmanned aerial vehicles, better known as drones. Most of those are being designed, and we would like to see them manufactured here in the state of California. We just provided a inventory tax credit to SpaceX, which is in the heart of my district, which is an aerospace company that is going to be the leading company, if not already, in space travel. So that is not directly commercial travel, but at the same time, we want to support and expand that. I mean, Southern California, especially the South Bay, which I represent, has been the heart of the aerospace industry for over 60 years, and unfortunately, that's no longer the case. So if we can find ways to not only maintain that which is here, but find additional ways to attract new industries in that area, I'm all for it, and always open, again, for the discussion and dialogue. What we can best do right now, since I represent LAX, is to continue to promote the modernization of LAX and the extension of the light rail into LAX, so we can afford people greater access. Again, we don't have to expand LAX. I think we need to modernize LAX so we can move people more efficiently through the airport, so we can reduce all of the challenges that many of the residents who live around that area face on a daily basis.
So are you for bringing light rail into the airport itself?
It works in every other airport around the country, so I think LAX, if we're a world-class city, as we always claim LA is, then we should have a world-class airport, and we should afford them the amenities. That's why I was happy to author AB 128 last year, which is a modernization piece of legislation. But from a law enforcement standpoint, it gave those men and women, the most diverse police department probably in the state, if not the nation, full police status. And they clearly demonstrated their talents and skill set at the tragic situation that happened in November. So these men and women are trained, they're prepared, and I think as we talk about the volume of customers and travelers that go through LAX, they want to be able to rest assured that they're being provided the state-of-the-art safety, and I think the LAX police officers are now well-suited to do that with 830.1.
Okay. And that can relate back to our gun control conversation. And again, we can spend a full half hour talking about that. But I'd like to move back to the jobs discussion for a moment. What are you doing to bring not just aerospace jobs, but what are you doing to bring other jobs or any jobs you can to Southern California?
See, but the question of what are we doing or what am I doing, it's just not simple as X, Y, and Z. What we have to do is create a climate where businesses want to come to California. And again, making sure that we don't have exorbitant electric rates is one of the issues that we hear all the time. It costs too much to, you know, produce or purchase power in California. So let's make sure that our business sector is not being gouged on unnecessary electric rates. We have to make sure that we don't have overburdensome regulations on business that make it unattractive for them to do business. Maintain the safeguards, but we have to find ways to streamline permitting processes here in California so we can do it not only better but faster here in California. So we just have to make sure that we have a proper approach, because it shouldn't be labor versus business or vice versa. We should find a way to work together in a harmonious way to continue to be the leading state in the nation on not only jobs but education as well.
If a company were to say that they're interested in coming to California, would you be willing to agree, or would you support a reduction in regulation or taxes?
It all depends on what they are. I mean, you can't answer a blanket question like that. It all depends on in what area they would be and how they would be applied, how it would be assessed, and what level of break you're talking about. I mean, I think as long as you are open to having the discussion, I think the opportunity presents itself to, you know, provide opportunities. But a lot of times we're too close-minded to, you know, even having a discussion. And I think I'm always open for dialogue. I need to hear from both sides before you make a decision.
Okay. And I'd like to move our conversation now to toxic waste. In November, the Los Angeles Times reported that the California Department of Toxic Substances Control has had difficulty keeping track of all the toxic waste in the state. Difficulty to the tone of missing tons of toxic waste. Is this acceptable to you?
No, I don't think it would be acceptable to anyone. I mean, it speaks to the size of government, not just state government, but federal government as well, and not knowing who's on first and where things are at all times. And I think we have too many moving parts, and I think it goes back to the need for automation. I think if you were able to be more automated in the work of governance, you would be able to track not only toxic waste, but other areas of concern where money is being spent, where it's not being spent, a lot more effective. You get, customers and residents to services quicker if you automated things. So I think automation would help address not only lack of oversight for toxic materials, but also helping folks register their car in a more expedient way.
And would you say that there is a general feeling in the Assembly that there will be legislation put forth this session that reforms the Department of Toxic Substances Control?
I can't say that there will. I mean, that's not a discussion I've been a part of. But again, being that many times we're a reactionary body, and we like to respond to the flavor of the day, I wouldn't be the least bit surprised if there are pieces of legislation. Case in point, when, you know, a lot of folks start talking about fracking. Mm-hmm. 2 years ago, we had 23 fracking bills. So whatever the flavor is of the day, you can pretty much assure there's going to be a piece of legislation trying to address it.
Okay. And the hot seat reached out to Director Debbie Raphael in an effort to to get her on the hot seat to ask her questions about this. Now, do you feel it's a problem that the director has refused interview inquiries, and do you think that affects their ability to be held accountable by the media?
I don't see it as a problem. I'm a full proponent of transparency. And I think if you have a story to tell, you need to tell it. I mean, if it's a reason why they can't track this material, I think the public needs to know. So from the standpoint of just transparency, I think the director would want to do that. What form she chooses to do that in, it's not for me to say. And maybe she has some other way of getting this information out, via a website or, you know, electronically. I don't know. But I'm not going to fault her for not necessarily talking to the media, but I think at some point the public needs to be informed as to what those practices or corrections are going to be going forward in order to keep track of such waste as toxic waste.
Okay, and I've got two more questions that need relatively short answers because we're running very short on time. One of which is, what are your thoughts on the Hollywood Park development project?
I think as it moves forward, we'll have to see. I think I'm excited about it right now. I mean, 1 million square foot of retail is exciting. I think we've seen the benefits of investment by Madison Square Gardens with the Fabulous Farm. It's back to being the Fabulous Farm, and I think if we can pull the Hollywood Park development together, I think it's going to provide Inglewood again of being the city of champions and a destination point, not just a drive-through when you're going to and from the airport.
Okay, so you're waiting to see what happens with the development as it moves forward.
What I see so far, I like.
Okay, and last question is, right now, are you willing to say who you support for the office of L.A. County Sheriff?
No, I'm not.
Okay, well, thank you very much for joining me today, Assemblyman Bradford. It was a pleasure to have you on, and I hope we have the opportunity to speak with you again before the end of your last term.
I appreciate it, Max. I enjoyed it.
Thank you very much.
Okay,
we appreciate having you.
All right.
The Hot Seat After Hours starts right now. You can email the Hot Seat inbox at thehotseatwithmaxschwartz@gmail.com, or you can tweet me at MaxSchwartzTV. You can also read and follow my blog at maxschwartztv.blogspot.com. You can subscribe to the Hot Seat's newsletter by clicking the link on our page. Go to innerburgradio.org/podcast and click on the link underneath the Hot Seat's description. Thank you for listening. I hope you'll join me next time with Assemblyman Sebastian Ridley Thomas.